What's up, music producers?
What is up? We are back.
Praise the Lord.
Praise him.
What's up, Ray?
Hey, what's up, Rome? I'm doing good. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great.
All right, it's good.
Hot, but great.
It's 100, triple digits already in June.
Hopefully, wherever you're all spending your summer at, you're actually not that hot. But
right.
We're getting hot here.
That's right.
Which is all right.
Yeah.
I like summer.
Stay inside. And if you go outside, go early in the morning or late at night.
I'll go midday and just go in the pool.
No.
No?
No.
You need some sun, right? You're getting kind of light skinned.
That's right.
I definitely am. That winter don't play a game with me. I go ghostly white.
Do you get dark in the summer?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm mixed. I got a little Mexican in me.
Come on, mix.
All my right. Boys are already dark.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Mila just lets them out there in their diaper in the backyard. They are.
Get that sun.
Adonis came out dark. Apollo's white, but now he's dark because they really? Go out there.
That's hilarious.
So hopefully y'all aren't sweating too much.
That's right, exactly.
Hopefully your air conditioning's working in your car.
Yep.
I remember days that mine didn't.
That would be bad. Get that Freon.
Get that Freon injection. So this episode, we're going to talk about pro mixing tips for better music.
Yes.
You know, there's ways to mix, and then there's good ways to mix.
That's right.
And better ways.
Efficient ways and non-efficient
ways. And we're going to put you on some game to get your mixes.
Popping.
So I'm Rome. This is Ray.
Hey.
Music producers for a minute. Ray has some of them little golden, what are they called?
Well, they're really plaques, but yeah.
What's the little statue thing called?
Yeah, statuettes.
Yeah, but what's the actual?
Oh, Grammy.
Yeah, it's a Grammy, but it's a little instrument. Or not the instrument, the player.
It's a phonic something?
Something or, phone.
Or, yeah, something phone.
Y'all know what it is.
Yeah, those are cool.
So we're here to help y'all. So hopefully we put you on some game to get your stuff to the next level.
Woo-hoo.
Before we jump in, we have a free gift for you. ForwardProducer.com/ISP. If you're watching, it's right there on the screen. Go check it out. 7 ways to level up your music production game.
That's right.
We're here to help y'all. So go check it out. Completely free. Just go to that website, ForwardProducer.com/ISP.
Boom, boom.
We have industry news, Ray Dog.
Industry news.
Let us know.
Yes, it's really cool because the Jonas Group, my good friends there, launched a new office in Nashville, Tennessee on Music Row. So congratulations to Kevin, Phil, George, and Leslie. I'm excited for them. It's a big deal. And they had a pretty big write-up in, I think, in Music Row magazine and
nice.
All of the other stuff.
Is that
going
to be their main hub?
Well, they're really based out of North Carolina. Well, yes. As for the Jonas Group, yes.
Nashville.
That's
the place to be, I guess, if you're in music.
Great. And Leslie is head of publishing, so man, she's coming with like 14 number one hits. I mean, she's a rock star publisher. Phil Guarini, you got to meet Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Rock star Disney. Like, he actually helped oversee 2 or 3 divisions or something.
Mm-hmm.
At Disney. George Moneyball, man, he's brilliant at all things. Actually, kind of what we're talking about, leveraging different things for music entrepreneurship.
Mm.
George is a genius at. So anyway, congratulations, everybody.
Congrats, Jonas Group.
We're excited for y'all.
Congratulations. Our next segment, we're going to be talking about some limiting beliefs.
Limiting beliefs. So, what kind of beliefs are limiting you?
Limiting mindsets. So this one we're going to talk about today is working with big artists in order to make good money. You have to do it because that's the only way you can make good money as a music producer.
Yeah.
That's a limiting belief.
That is a limiting belief.
Let them know, Ray.
The truth is, definitely the artist is a big deal, having an artist. But you as the producer, you're the one that actually can create the tracks. That is a powerful position to be in. And a lot of people, I don't think, really recognize. Like they always just point to the artist.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, the artist is nothing without the producer. Like it's truly is, you know, a symbiotic relationship there. Mm-hmm. So if you as an artist, if you're not signed, then, man, if you do like a track deal or something with a producer, man, that producer can do all sorts of kind of things for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people just use it as a cop out.
Yeah, for sure.
When you could be grinding and working on more music,
yep.
You're kind of like, well, I haven't really connected with any big artists, so I'm just going to wait.
You're right. Because, I mean, the technical thing that you become is you become that track's owner. So there are multiple streams, you know, of revenue that you can make being the owner of that track. Mm-hmm. Like, you can pitch it to movies and television. You can, pitch it to all sorts of kind of things. Like You can get the publishing from it. You can get, you know, the sound recording, because you are the owner, right? Because especially if the artist is not paying for the track, or a partially payment or something like that.
Whatever your deal is.
Absolutely. In this market with, what, independents making 50% of the market share?
Time to jump in with
the music business, absolutely.
Yeah, I think with people too, they just either they don't know how to just make more money off of it, right. Or they just think that's the only way. That's why it's a limiting belief.
Correct.
Like, I'm a fan of putting the reps in,
yep.
And creating. I mean, even if you were only the engineer side of production,
uh-huh.
You could figure out how to get some people together to make music to have a library.
Yep.
That way, if someone does come around and say, "Hey, I'm looking for a track. Exactly. What do you have?" You get to send them a little Dropbox link or a Google Drive link to right. Your library and say, "This is what I have." And they're like, "Oh, cool. I like A. Can we use that one?"
Yep.
Sure, let's do it.
And then another super quick tip, and this is super valuable, is get as much of the publishing as you can, but do some kind of deal for publishing.
Yeah,
either do a 50-50 with whoever, because sometimes the artist is not the writer, but so whoever the writer is, if you're the producer, figure out how to get a percent of the ownership of that publishing. Then you'll have it two ways. You'll have it on both sides. You'll have the publishing side, and you'll have your sound recording that you're the owner because you're the producer.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
So that means you got multiple streams on one piece.
That's right.
And it's something that you could pass off to your kids eventually.
Yeah, like, I don't know if I said this on the podcast before, but I was working with an artist. It was an independent artist who ended up getting a deal for a promo placement for 7-Up. And I actually negotiated the deal. It was 70 grand, you know, total. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you do those deals, it's 50-50 publishing. Sound recording owner. So, you know, 35,000 went to the publisher, 35,000 went to whoever owned the track. So,
and just sold it outright.
Yep, exactly.
So your assets could get valuable with time.
Right.
Especially now everyone needs music.
And so imagine if you had half the publishing and you're the producer.
You're getting a double portion.
Did I say that?
Yeah, so get broken off that limiting belief that you only need to work with big artists in order to make some good money.
Yeah.
Work with everyone that you think is a good partner to work with.
Right.
So our main talk, we are talking about pro-level mixing for better music. The first thing we're going to talk about is gain staging. And Ray, you've had breakthrough with gain staging.
Gain staging changed my life. Gain staging is life. A little Ted Lasso.
A little life injection.
Yeah, I know this is funny. This is going to sound silly, but I've been doing in the studio for like 20-something years, right? And until probably 6 months ago, I didn't even know what gain was compared to volume. I thought gain
compared to the fader.
Yeah, right. I thought gain was like, you know, I would say
it just gets
gain
louder.
It up.
I know it goes
gain
louder.
It up. That meant just kind of turn it up, but no, like I didn't know that gain was the input and the fader was the output.
Yeah,
I didn't know that until like 6 months.
You're like, it sounds good. I don't need to know all the details,
right? So, but then why when I get to the end of the mixing is everything get distorted?
Because your gain set too high,
right?
Yep,
and it's clipping all the plugins.
Yep.
Right. So I had no idea. So gain staging, guys, is one of the biggest, for at least for me, it's one of the number one things that you really got to watch out for as you're mixing, because that can make or break everything. But it changed my
whole
thing.
That starts at recording, basically. And then when you get to the mixing side, you're like, okay, maybe I need to adjust. Maybe it wasn't recorded that good.
Right. So typically what I do is I'll do an automatic minus 10, maybe even as much as an automatic minus 14.
On the fader?
On every single channel.
On fader or on gain?
Gain.
You leave the fader at zero?
Yeah. Fader's at zero. They're at nominal zero. And then I do the gain.
Nice.
I like minus 10, minus 14. Now, there are a lot more technical explanations that you can go into, but I don't want to get into that right now. But there's tons of YouTube videos about the technical aspect of why you want to do that. Mm-hmm. But the biggest is just so that whenever your signal's coming in and then going out to the plug-in, it doesn't overload or overdrive your plug-in. Mm-hmm. That's one of the biggest reasons to do it.
Some of those plug-ins want to be overdriven to get a little
right
warmth
sound. And then you can do that, right? But in general, they don't like it. Yeah. And it's easy to clip those things.
Yeah, I'm a fan of... I record a lot, too, so I record for the mix, like what we talk about, recording is mixing.
Yeah.
So I'll make sure that my gain is around yellow at the highest, like barely getting into yellow.
Yeah.
Usually that's pretty good for me, and then just go from there.
Well, dude, it
I don't run it too hot ever.
Wow, that's cool. Well, it actually made a huge difference in my game, the whole thing, and so now, actually, one of the tracks that I first mixed with that setup is now on the radio.
Hey. Yeah, breakthrough, and now it's on the radio.
Now it's on the radio, so it's a big, big tip.
So the next one, let's talk about sidechaining.
Yes.
I talk about this a lot for like hip-hop music.
Uh-huh.
Because the main way I use it is for kick and 808 or bass.
Boom.
So if you have the kick head at the same time and the bass head at the same time, they could clash on that low end.
Yeah.
Sound kind of funky. So
which one do you put first? Like,
I'll have the kick and then the 808 will duck out.
Oh, okay.
Just for that quick initial hit, and then it'll come back in.
Oh, okay. So the tone is the one that goes down.
Yeah, it'll be ducked down.
Have you ever done it the opposite?
No.
Because you didn't like it?
No, because with beats that I make, everything has to hit hard, you know, so the kick is usually the one that hits hard.
Yeah,
that's and the 808 right. comes in just to make it feel good.
Yeah. On live, you know, if it's live drums or if I have, like, different samples or, you know, all that kind of thing, I think it's the same thing between the kick and the bass then.
Yeah, I haven't done too much sidechaining with the bass guitar just because I haven't heard any weird stuff with it, because they're kind of, depending on where your kick is and your bass is, they're not really clashing in the same frequency as much.
Right, but to get that hard hitting kick drum,
yeah,
even on a live track, you know, you need to sidechain the bass.
Yeah, sidechain it.
Sidechain it!
So the nerdy aspect of what we're doing is you're sending a signal out from... we'll say the kick is the first thing that hits.
Yeah.
Sending a signal out to a compressor, a limiter, or a plugin that just ducks volume down.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as it hits, it tells that plugin to pull down the volume just for that instance. And you can set how long, you can set when, if it's delayed, or if it's right in that instance. Just sounds better.
Better. More better.
Sounds more better. So the next one we talked about before is phase. This is a huge one.
Phase.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah. Phasing, like, now, there are some cases where it's cool, but most cases
it's trash. Not,
right? So basically, it's when, and especially it happens when you have multiple microphones in the same room. So drums, a lot of times, you'll have phase problems. And basically, it's when something's happening either in the console or whatever, where the waveform is going one way and then on one microphone and then going the opposite way with another microphone.
Cancels.
That's right. So it cancels. When those two opposing waves meet, they cancel each other out, and it sounds very weak. It's actually weird.
It doesn't sound as full.
That's exactly
full
right.
spectrum.
So typically on a DAW, on a DAW, or especially on consoles, every track has a phase inverter. So you want to click that button and
circle
test
with the line through it.
That's right. And you want to test to make sure that the the phase that it's in phase.
So the old school way of doing it is you have them play the snare, crack, crack, yeah. crack, and you just flip it to see what sounds better.
Exactly.
Like, yep, that one yeah. sounds fuller.
Good. And that, right, and that's basically what you do with plugins now. You just yep. reverse the phase.
So it's a little different with like cymbals uh-huh. and guitar. So what I would recommend is going on mono uh-huh. or using a phase plugin to show you,
right?
You know, that sort of thing. That's why it's good. Like, I don't always mix a mono, but I'll check. I'll reference just quick in mono to make sure stuff sounds right.
Yeah.
Sounds correct when it could be phase, especially if you're panning. Like, I'll record drums and I'll record them already panned on the DAW.
Uh-huh.
So I'll have to go in and check the phase by mixing in mono to see, like, okay, the cymbals aren't canceling each other out.
Right.
The snare doesn't cancel out.
Yeah, phasing is one of those foundational things like gain staging.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If junk is out of phase, you know, and you're not really testing it, making sure, you're going to lose your stereo image and yeah. won't sound near as
especially
as
in the mixing stage,
because
you may get tracks that are not in phase. You don't know where you may get your tracks.
That's right.
And they'll just send them to you and they didn't check phase, so...
Right.
Check your phase, because if you send that mix out and it's not, then you're amateur sounding.
That's right.
Next thing is full mix panning. So this is just, we
yeah.
can just say what we do, kind of a rule of thumb. Like, kick and snare will stay in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Bass is in the middle. Vocals in the middle.
That's right. That's your main middle line.
What are you panning?
Okay, so two things on.
And I'll say if I agree or not.
Okay, so on drums, kick and snare up the middle, but I'll pan a hi-hat to the left, and then an opposing percussion thing on the right.
So there's like a shaker or something?
Yeah, so there's, yeah, right. There's a hi-hat on the left, shaker on the right, you know, things
if
like
you have
that.
A shaker.
Vocals, background vocals, I do about a 50-50. I mean, depending on how many I track. If I have a ton, then I can
and
go.
Hard if you
yeah,
want.
I can go 100, but they have to be dead on perfect with each other in order for you to do that.
And that's gonna come to your magic of your editing skill.
Exactly. So, and then keyboards are always panned hard left, hard right.
Toms, you're panning
super wide. Toms, no matter what, whether if it's a live drummer or programmed drums, I always do. Like, as if I'm sitting at the drum set. So I go left to right.
So when you put the headphones on, it's like you're sitting at the drum set.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, because some people do it the other way.
Yeah.
I've done both. I
which
really don't
is
care.
Which is audience perspective.
Yeah.
I just thought about that.
Yeah.
So, but I do it because I'm a player.
It doesn't really make a difference.
Right, it doesn't.
It don't.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
Except for my way, it's the best way.
Right. Okay. Guitar is hard pan.
Yeah, guitars are always hard pan.
Except
hard left.
My thing is, like, in the worship space, it's like you got more electrics than you have acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll hard pan the electrics, and then I may put the acoustic in the middle.
Yeah.
Unless sure. there's something complementing, like percussion or something, I may pan it a little bit.
Yeah.
It all depends.
And then, dude, I'm a big doubler.
On what instrument?
Just, I mean, let's say if I'm doing acoustics, I'll double the acoustic and
right.
then kind of.
Oh, yeah, hard pan them?
Yeah, well, not hard pan. I won't hard pan them, but, you know, a nice 25, 50, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, it depends on your mix, too. Like, if you're doing an acoustic song where it's just acoustic and vocal and you want it to sound mega huge,
yeah,
double it, and then I would hard pan the acoustics.
Yeah.
And maybe even record a third acoustic in the
exactly,
middle.
Which is up an octave.
Yeah. But your playing's got to be right.
It's
if you're playing it right, it's going to be not sounding so good.
That's right.
Yeah, that about covers it. Hard pan the keys, guitars, mm-hmm. vocals. If you get two of the same harmonies in there, then you can pan those a little more.
Yeah.
You're carving out, for lack of a better term, carving out a space for the main vocal to sit in the middle.
That's right.
Which we'll talk about that more.
Little ear candy stuff. That's kind of to taste. Hard left, hard right.
Yeah.
Maybe some echoing.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff.
Yep. Let's see. We have
boom
dynamic EQ. Which I'm a huge fan of.
Talk
dynamic
about that
EQ.
Because you're probably better at that than me.
You don't use it as much.
Yeah.
Or you're new to it.
I'll use it like. Well, I use dynamic EQs on. Side chaining when I'm trying
to duck something out.
Yeah,
frequency.
Duck on vocals. Correct.
Yeah, I would. Dynamic EQ is a. If I could, I'd put it on everything.
There you go.
I like it on vocal. I use it as a de-esser.
Yeah, me
a lot.
Too. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Some of them have like a visual EQ on there, so you could even see what kind of frequencies are poking out here and there.
Logic has some great dynamic EQs.
So you go in there and just pull that out just for that section. There is, shout out Isotope, not sponsored, but I use them.
Yeah.
They have a plugin called like Relay, I believe. I don't really use it that much because I figured a way to dial in my stuff. But say you have an instrument track and you're recording vocals on top of it. Usually the instrumentals are like full spectrum, master. They just sound good, so people will buy them.
Yeah.
But it's going to be hard for your vocal to sit there if it's not mixed right.
Right.
So Isotope has a plugin that will like reference your instrumental, and it'll add a plugin to your vocal, and it will carve out frequencies in the instrumental automatically for your vocal to sit better.
Nice.
That's kind of what a dynamic EQ will do, is just for that section that the vocal pops in, it'll pull out some mids and highs and that sort of thing.
And then there's a dynamic EQ that I think I want to get. It's called ProLab or Pro something. ProQ.
Yeah. I've seen them.
I think I definitely want to get. A lot of the big guys are doing that. I want to see it because it gives you just a lot, I guess, a lot more control over the EQ and the dynamics of it. And also you can add, different compressions and all sorts of stuff to it.
Yep. Yeah, I'm a fan of TDR Nova.
Yeah.
Honestly, any dynamic EQ is going to basically get the job done.
Yeah.
The easy one is de-esser. You can see exactly where the S is coming through and just let it pull it out.
That's right.
Or if you have like some nasty EQs that, like, if you have a singer that's really dynamic in their vocal, and they sing like pretty consistent, but maybe they get to the bridge and they have a weird frequency in their voice because they're just trying to hit a note.
Yeah.
You could use that dynamic EQ to kind of bring back that frequency.
Yeah.
And dial in the vocal better. Which leads us to our next section, is dialing in vocals.
Boom.
Which is probably the moneymaker.
The lead vocal?
Yes.
Okay.
And background, but the main, I would say, is dialing in your main vocal is the moneymaker.
Gotcha.
What would you say? You
agree? Okay. So here's kind of my initial setup when I'm doing a mix. Gain stage everything at least a minus 10. Okay. Then I go to...
So your master fader is hitting at minus 10?
Correct.
Right.
Well, the fader's at zero. But it's only going to go to minus 10.
Audio on the master bus.
The meter's only going to minus 10. Then the next thing I do is I get the drums in play. And when I say drums, though, I just mean mainly the kick and snare. I get those two hopping. And then the third thing I do is vocals. Mm-hmm. So I get a solid foundation with drums. And then that straight up, that beautiful vocal right there in front of everything, and I mix everything else around it.
You start bringing stuff around it.
Yeah, but I get those two things done first, because the drums, y'all, is the power of your track, and the vocal is the centerpiece of your track.
Mm-hmm.
So I get those. I do those two things first. That's how I do it.
Yeah, I'm a fan of. I think listening to the song, it kind of tells you what parts you got to dive into first.
Uh-huh.
So I don't always do it like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do, but I usually switch it up.
Now, you know who taught me that system? Was Jed Seneca.
Jed. Come on. Yeah. Shout out, Jed.
Jed Seneca.
Yeah, I would. I'm,
it works.
I'm a big fan of using templates for vocals, especially if you know like what mic they're recording on, or if you worked with the singer before.
What do you mean templates?
So having like your EQ, having your compression, de-esser, your verb already on.
Oh, yeah.
That way you just pop your vocal there.
I should probably do that. That would probably save me about an hour if I just figured out what plugins I like best on vocals. Because they're
the
pretty much
ones.
The same.
They are.
Yeah.
If you really think about it.
And in the order. I already have my order.
Yep.
Okay, so hey, do you like to compress before you EQ on the vocal or compress after you EQ?
It depends on the vocal. That's a trick question.
All right. Well,
I'll do EQ twice on there sometimes.
Yeah, and I'll do like, and then that's it.
I would do EQ first, and then compression, and then probably a dynamic EQ.
That's what I like to do.
Which I told one of our guys in the core, I was like, he's having trouble dialing in his vocals.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you use your template? No. I'm like, dude, just use, you did this last five tracks that sound good and you liked it, and you're trying to do something different for your vocal, start off with a template and adjust from there, and that would break through for him.
I should.
Like, I'm not a big fan of waves, but they do have that studio rack.
Yeah.
Which if you do run waves, I don't use them. I use Logic and a lot of stock.
Yeah.
But they have the studio rack where you could put all your waves plug and chain, nice. And you just pull up the preset and boom, they're all there.
Yeah.
Which I did that before, and then I updated Logic and it crashed Logic and when it opens. I said, no way. No, thank you. I'm not Pro Tools in it right now.
Okay, so do you do parallel compression on your vocals too?
No.
I do.
I usually get a stack and then pull the stack underneath.
Oh. I do that too, though.
To me, it sounds better.
I'll do parallel compression and then the double stack.
Dang, you got triple Gloria. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, working with like rap vocal, if you get a good, solid main vocal take, all the other stuff is just like extra, like an ad lib or something like that. It's just extra. I usually don't double it at all.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a chorus or something.
Now, I know we're getting a little nerdy on this, but even when I, because we're talking about vocals, right? Yes, I put de-esser on it, right? Mm-hmm. But before I do that, I actually go through all the entire vocal and gain down the S's.
Nah.
Hardcore. Then I put one de-esser on it, and then I'm done.
Nah, I can't do that. I don't got time for all
it
that.
It doesn't take that long.
Yeah, it does. No, it doesn't. You got to go in there, cut, chop, down.
No,
there's plugins that do that for you.
A 5-minute song, probably 15, 20 minutes.
Nah, I don't need 15, 20. I'm in creative mode.
And then you got full control, dude.
When I'm in creative mode, I'm like, I'm just making decisions. Boom, 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 no, boom.
I'm in mix mode. That's what I do.
Yeah. I would not do that. That would hurt my brain.
No, it's fine. It down. Plus, it's not a ton of them anyway.
Well, you got plugins like Nectar that will do
Nectar.
Good de-esser. Your dynamic EQ, the stock Logic.
We need
Logic
an AI de-esser. Thing. Don't even get me
that
started.
Will automatically chop those for you.
Yeah.
See, because you don't like doing it. You still do it though. I know how it is.
Yeah,
you'll still do it. Just
I'm hardcore and old school.
One thing we don't have on here though is high pass filtering.
Everything. Oh, yeah. So that's actually one of the things I do in my foundationally mm-hmm. on the mix is I put a high pass filter on every track.
Like every track's going to have an EQ basically anyways.
Correct.
High pass filter is going to be to some extent, not as much on the bass as you would on a vocal.
Right. But I like doing that because that allows me. Of course, some people don't do it. You know, they do with EQ on each individual track, and that's fine. But for me, the fastest way to control the low mid, which is, you know, that tubbiness in a track, like
that's the amateur EQ that's
right
in there. You're like, oh, I don't sound.
Yeah,
like
the minute I go through and adjust my high passes with that, all that tubbiness goes away. Like it gives me more control, and that's why I do it. Very specific control.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing with dialing and vocal too, is like you record on a mic like this. This one's EQ'd, by the way, and compressed already.
Oh, yeah.
But if it wasn't, it would have like a weird midness to it probably.
Correct.
Some more than others. And then it would also have weird low end.
Right. It'd be too tubby.
So like anytime I track a vocal and typically the same EQ, high pass filter up to maybe like 200.
Yep.
And then
yep.
I'll even do a bell down around a little further up on the EQ there.
Huh, nice.
And that usually dials it in good enough for people to track, and then for mix, yep. I may have to move it around.
There you go.
Sweet. We got a story, Bray Dog. You got a story.
Boom. Okay. Back in the day when I was playing with Michael W., we did this event called Celebrate Freedom. It was in Dallas. Okay, so it was probably the largest. In fact, we did it like 2 or 3 years in a row. Probably the largest live crowd I've ever played in front of, about 100,000. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And it's they did it at the South Fork Ranch in Dallas. Have you seen that TV show Dallas?
Copyright.
Yeah, anyway. So they have a flyover of South Fork Ranch. Anyway, so we were going there, okay? We were playing. Typically, the set was an hour. They had a downpour.
Mm.
A downpour. It was an outdoor event, full downpour. Okay.
So torrential, whatever.
Right. So we're in like whatever dressing room we're in, just kind of waiting for it to happen. So then the downpour is over. They had, you know, covered all the gear, all the instruments, right? And so it stopped raining. So we, but then we go, hey, because of the rain and this and that, y'all only have 20 minutes of sound check. That's all you got. And then you got to start the show. So we were kind of scrambling. And because of the rain and some other things, things got disconnected or whatever. Ugh. All I had in my monitor. Now, y'all, look, the bigger the crowd and the bigger the venue, the more you rely on your in-ears because you can't.
You get some slap back on.
Yeah, you can't.
People singing off key.
Exactly. It's just so big that you'll have no reference, right? So, but because of all the sound problems, all I had in my ears was my hi-hat mic, click.
No. At least you had the click.
And then Michael's vocal. That's all I had.
Oh, gosh.
So, no tracks.
They didn't have a monitor mixer there?
Nope. No tracks. I didn't have any track references.
No vocal cues?
No vocal cues, no guitars, no bass, no nothing. All right, so dude, and that's all we had. So hey, guys, we gotta go. We gotta do this. All right, here we go. And I don't know what I'm doing, but all I knew is I had to click in Michael's vocal, and then my hi hat. Like that's all I had. So we click off, boom, and so we do the whole thing, and it's rocking. I get as hard as it. As I could rock with my hi-hat.
The only hi-hat mic on there.
Right, so it's good. So we did the hour set. So afterwards...
For an hour?
Yeah, we had... it was like 12, 15 songs or something crazy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's all we had. So about 20, 30 minutes afterwards, some of the guys came in, some of the sound dudes, hey, man, that sounded great. And we were like, what, you mean the front of house? Yeah, front of house, but... But the recording sounded great. Dude, we didn't know this, but they were recording Celebrate Freedom that year and putting out a record. And we had no clue. They had a full Pro Tools set up in the back. And the splitter was fine. So they got all the tracks.
The splitter going to them was fine, but to go into your monitor was not.
Oh, my monitor. Oh, right. And then the front of the house was a little iffy, too.
Right. Hey, but they're recording.
But we're going to record it, and we're going to put out a record.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
So what's funny was we ended up putting out, they ended up putting out that record. We didn't do any fixes. Literally, after we played that hour, like we were on the bus like an hour later. We were gone. No fixes, no nothing.
Sheesh.
And what was on the record was that day that we recorded. And even to boot... The song that they chose was the song I wrote with Michael. So, anyway, that's my story. It's crazy.
That is crazy.
That's probably some of the weirdest conditions I've ever played in was, you know, in front of 100,000 people.
Sheesh.
Pouring down rain.
And click.
Yeah, it was
Michael's
crazy.
Voice.
It was crazy.
Hey, but you prove you don't need much else to make
that's
it work.
Right.
Like, but next time, no hi-hat mic.
Right.
And keep taking stuff out.
But the thing is, that was the only way. But we locked in with the tracks, everything. I mean, the tracking sounds fine. We never did any overdubs. And then they released the record, and it goes gold.
Dang, come on, somebody.
It's crazy. Anyway.
That's awesome. Well, before we jump off, we want to let you all know about forwardproducer.com/ISP.
Boom.
Industry Standard Productions. Go pick it up completely free.
Do it. And it's helping a lot of people, man.
Yeah. Go check it out. It
really is.
And if you could do us a huge favor, if you could like, share, comment,
subscribe.
That will help us out a ton.
Yes.
And we appreciate y'all tuning in. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
Peace. Let's not lose this love.